are building a religion. We are building it bigger. We are widening the corridors and adding more lanes. We are building a religion, a limited edition. We are now accepting callers for these pendant keychains. Your resistance is useless.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humans. We are the core.
Hey everyone, Bob here. In today's episode of Infants on Thrones, we're going to discuss Mormon credibility. Well, kind of. For reasons we'll get into in the episode, I decided to create a Mormon cred scale. That's right, a Mormon cred scale. What it tries to do is measure Mormon credibility based on how much of the, what I like to call the end-to-end Mormon experience you've partaken of in this life. It's really just meant to be a fun and simple way to measure and compare Mormon credibility among your Mormon friends. And I'd like to think maybe it could even be insightful. I don't know, you tell me. You see, we're going to try something slightly different in that we're going to release this Mormon cred scale along with the episode. So if you want to participate, check out the link in the show notes or go to infantsonthrones.com/survey or just go to our main page and click on the survey button in the upper right. You'll get to a page to answer just 18 questions, after which, you know, you're going to be judged appropriately. And then you'll be given a score out of 100 with a description of your Mormon credibility. But back to the podcast. I'm joined by Glenn, Jake, Matt, and Tom. It's a full house and quite the lively discussion on this Mormon credibility concept. Can it really be quantified? What's the best way to do it? All those sorts of things we're going to talk about. We're here to break it down for you. I do want to mention that the first 15 minutes or so, it's more set up about the concept, followed by the rest of the episode where we discuss it in a lot more detail. So one tip I'd give you is to go ahead and take the survey now. I mean, that is if you're interested, because it'll just take a few minutes and it'll give you even more context more quickly. But that said, you know, feel free to listen directly. There's no need to take the survey to get what we're talking about. Anyway, enough of that. Let's kick it off with Glenn explaining how this came to be. Take it away, Glenn.
So just setting the stage, you know, we did this. We had this conversation with Matthew Timian on being David Archuleta. And at one point, he mentioned that he was doing all this Mormon crap, like following girls around and whatnot. And, you know, I kind of pushed back on him because even in his essay, I was thinking, you know, you weren't Mormon for very long. And if you were 18 years old when you were converted, how Mormon can you really be?
I got remarried to a girl I met on an ex-Mormon board. And so that was like I graduated college, and then I moved to Salt Lake City to be with this girl. So, you know, I'm doing all the same Mormon crap over and over again. I'm like, you know, following my dick around. Moving to Salt Lake to be with her or whatever.
Why do you call that Mormon crap?
Because I've never seen anyone, you know, who else proposes after 3 weeks, relocates across, you know, I went from Southern California to Utah for a girl I've seen a half dozen times. I'm like up and rooting my life for someone I barely know, and it's just for a girl. And yeah, you know, other people do it too, so maybe it isn't right calling it Mormon crap. But
well, but here's kind of the, and I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of the issue that I take. You weren't raised Mormon, you know. You were 17, 18 years old when you joined the church. So, like, and I was thinking about this when I was listening to your essay, like wondering how much of the Mormonness really seeped in and informs the way you see the world. And I'm asking this as a genuine question. I don't know. You know, like, because I was raised in it, went through the whole primary thing, like, I feel like my brain was formed by Mormonism, where yours wasn't. Yours was formed in this family that wasn't really religious. But then you joined, you were a member for a few years, and then you weren't. So, like, how impactful was that few years of Mormonism in the way that you see the world that, you know, you're saying you did the Mormon thing of going to Utah chasing a girl. I ask that as a sincere question. I don't really know. I think it's an interesting question to explore. So anyways, Bob, you heard the recording because you weren't actually part of that conversation, right? But you heard it back, and you had a couple ideas around it and where it fit for other things you'd been thinking.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this for a while, but I haven't had a reason or a catalyst to put it to paper. And I called it the Mormon cred scale, for lack of a better term. But apparently, after the conversation over email with all of you guys, I almost want to rename it Bob's Mormon Cred Scale, because you guys all you shat all over
no,
it. And you're like,
No. See, that's the problem with email. You can't tell if somebody's really shitting on it or not. Like, for me, no, I loved the idea. I just thought I thought it needed to be more expansive. I thought it needed to cover more areas than just like the heritage stuff. But anyway, we can get to that as we go. But yeah,
so
shit on it.
So the idea is like combining this phenomenon, which is just an exploitation technique for a website called BuzzFeed, where it's like, hey, which Harry Potter character are you? And people have been doing this kind of thing for years. It's just now there's people who do it like for a living. But you know, having a catchy way to have people who are affiliated with Mormonism in one way or another, active or inactive or all, you know, across the whole spectrum, fill out some sort of fun and breezy, easy questionnaire that then gives them some kind of point ranking on a scale, which suggests how much Mormon credibility they have. And so I thought that I had it fairly well constructed in my head based on my own experience as a Mormon, so I came up with these, it's like around 15 questions. I was thinking it'd be fun for, like, listeners and for you guys to like, well, first it was selfish for me because I wanted to put everyone in a box, because that's also a very Mormon thing to do, is like, hey, I need to know these very arbitrary things about you so then I can judge you in just the right way compared to other people who are Mormon. So that was part of the thing. So I still don't have Randy's score, but pretty much everyone else answered it. And, you know, spoiler alert, we're all pretty credible as Mormons, according to Bob's Mormon cred scale.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. So, nice. I don't know where to take it from here, but we can talk about what the questions are, the methodology, the reason, you know, it was defined the way it was, and then, you know, what you guys took issue with and how it could be better or what the best way is to determine Mormon credibility in a quantifiable way. That's more than just a joke.
Now, by the time we release this, you know, this episode, assuming that it ever becomes an episode.
Was the intro that bad?
No, but, you know, we've done
Bob,
this before.
Bob, this sucks already.
No, we've done this before. But anyway, you know, I mean, we want to have, like, this one of these BuzzFeed-type quizzes that people could do the way that they've done surveys on the website, right? I mean, that's kind of the idea, so that we're talking about it now, and then when people get done listening to this, they'll be so excited.
Right.
They'll go and they'll want to see what type of a Mormon they are. Are they Hermione? Or are they Hagrid?
Right.
Okay. Those aren't Mormons.
No.
Right.
No.
Why would they you know what's wrong with those?
You can, I mean, the questions are so obviously skewed to what you want to be. So, like, on the Star Wars one, it was pretty easy to be Han Solo. You just have to not pick. You have to comment on being sarcastic, kind of an asshole, and not want a lightsaber. And bam, you're Han Solo. So
you just made, like, a bad concept even worse, Matt. Thanks a lot. I thought this BuzzFeed thing as a methodology would be sort of fun, and you're like, dude, I game those all the time. Yeah. I'm the characters I want to be.
But so like, what's the purpose though of the scale of the scale? You know,
right?
Okay. So the purpose, from my point of view, anyway, was to categorize Mormons into three big buckets. And the individual point scores, we can get into the specifics, are kind of fun just for comparing, like comparing ACT scores is fun or whatever, or GPAs, or I don't know if you guys were nerdy in that way, or whatever other metric that matters to people as they grow up more than it should. So the three big buckets are, in my opinion, independent of whether or not you're active today, and that's part of how the scale was structured, how much credibility do you have talking about Mormonism? So there's full Mormon, then there's Mormon with caveats, and then there's like Mormon with heavy disclaimers,
like heavy petting,
almost not
you know,
Mormon.
Like petting and like that gradation. Well, you said heavy.
Only you would go there. Yeah, heavy. Wow, what a word. And if you're in that third category, then it's incumbent upon you, like this guy you guys interviewed on the previous episode, to kind of lay it on thick that there are these huge disclaimers, and not to just like be hanging out with the guys and you know, talking about Mormonism left and right, like you know what you're talking about. Like you should be a little more humble
so
about
you think
it.
That,
in
that
my
Matthew,
opinion,
who we talked to, didn't have enough Mormon cred to really be talking the way that he did. You think he needed to be more humble about his Mormon experience, or deferential to those of us who scored higher on the Bob Cred scale.
Yeah, something like that. And I don't mean to, the first example of this, the usefulness of this, to be the most dickish one, because, I mean, he was fine. It's just, we've all been in this position where somebody talks about Mormonism in the context of being super Mormon when you really, you know, peel back the layers of the onion and you're like, dude, you didn't even scratch the surface compared to the shit that I went through. So stop, like, being a crybaby about it. So there's that aspect, which is, we've all wanted to articulate our frustration with that because we're selfish people. But then there's just the fun side of it and just sort of, I don't know, we talk about Mormonism a lot on this podcast, so maybe we should invent a way that we claim ultimate authority on it, right?
I
actually think there is something to it because, like, there's certain Mormons that you want to hear from. Like, just to kind of go off and get, wash our own balls on this, but Tom Phillips, right? I think he carries probably the most Mormon credibility of most people that have been interviewed on Mormon themed podcasts. I would think so. Tom Phillips.
Oh, okay.
Because he's done things in the Mormon world that most of us haven't, like, you know, specifically the second anointing. So,
and also being a bishop and being a state president, you know.
Yeah,
but
so it's
he's a convert, so he would get negative points on Bob's Mormon cred scale.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So we'll go over that, but in defense of my scale, two things. One is he would still score nearly as high or higher than most everyone. The scale is almost defined or created such that very few people get a perfect 100, so it's a scale of 0 to 100, to keep it simple.
Was that intentional? Come on.
Yeah.
Was that intentional?
Yeah. It started as 102, but then, no. So the point is that getting a perfect 100 isn't necessarily the goal, because Mormonism isn't one easily definable thing, but it's enough of a definable thing that the way I, again, back to the points don't matter as much as the three categories, even though I'm going to quantify it now, I sort of loosely in my head, according to the scale, think that anybody who has 70 or higher and is, you know, more than two-thirds experienced Mormonism is pretty much experienced Mormonism, because we all overlap in that two-thirds way that we all can point to, but it's hard to define concretely. And then, you know, the scale slides down from there. Then there's the middle third. They're the group in the middle that have experienced like half of it, but not enough to be up in the two-thirds experience group, and so on and so forth.
Okay, I see what you're saying, but come on, man. If Tom Phillips scores less points on your credibility scale, then your credibility scale loses credibility.
Yeah, I agree. But I like that Tom brings up Tom Phillips as an example here. And maybe what we could do, Bob, now is actually like go through what your questions are, because listeners are probably wondering at this point. But like, I got an 85 out of 100 on yours, and that may be higher than Tom Phillips, but I wouldn't give myself as much cred, but based on, you know, the things that Tom's talking about, as Tom Phillips. So that is where I feel like the scale kind of it could be enhanced. So there could be more things taken into consideration than what you've got.
Sure. You guys picked like the Uchtdorf anomaly or whatever, which is sure.
Yeah,
there are
well-known scientific principle.
The Uchtdorf anomaly.
The Uchtdorf anomaly.
Coined right here, right now, the Uchtdorf anomaly. And what that states is that, yes, there are exceptions to the laws of Bob science that dictate that if you are a convert, you lose points. But then if you go like all the way into your 60s or 70s and make it all the way to the GA tract, okay, then you get a pass, and sure, the scale sort of breaks down for you. But like, that is like a less than 1% chance or less than 1% of the population. So, you know, all else considered, the scale is still pretty accurate.
Okay, so here's my question, and maybe this will be better answered as we go into the questions themselves. But my issue that I take with it is, okay, we're talking about having experienced Mormonism, and what exactly does that mean? Does that mean like participating in what is quote unquote the common Mormon experience, or is that internalizing the Mormon identity? Because yeah. I feel like those things can be different things, right. But they should be be addressed.
More the former and less the latter. So internalizing the Mormon identity and being like a hardcore Mormon versus a lighter Mormon isn't what this is trying to measure. It's trying to measure the end-to-end experience. So I have kind of like three criteria for what makes a good question for the scale. The first one is it's universally applicable. So to the extent possible, and you know, Mormonism only sort of allows for this, independent of sex, nationality, race, all of those factors, everybody gets a fair shot at the same amount of points on this scale. So by definition, you don't get to claim being more Mormon because you hold the priesthood versus a woman. She still has, and maybe that's just like me trying to be like reverse sexist and make sure it's fair or something. but I'm just trying to say it's universally applicable. It's men, women, somebody in the church internationally versus somebody in the church domestically. Although that doesn't quite hold true because there's some exceptions to that, but things that are part of the day to day, the key milestones of going through the end to end Mormon experience in this life. So that's criteria number one. Number two is universally accepted as something that has a certain threshold of meaningfulness. And again, this is somewhat debatable, but certain stuff isn't as relevant as other stuff. So, for instance,
to Bob.
Sure. Yeah. For instance, to Bob and to anybody,
he decrees from on high.
Yes. To anybody who has common sense, wearing a CTR ring doesn't have as much clout as going on a mission. They're both very Mormon, and you could claim that having a CTR ring defines part of this meaningfulness metric or whatever. But it's just not enough to be. And we also want, at least I wanted to keep the questions light and fun and not have it be like a 100 question, you know, Myers-Briggs sort of thing. So there's like a minimum threshold of meaningfulness and based on those key milestones in any given Mormon's life, again, according to me. And then the third category or criteria is belief type independent. So it was important to me that this scale could be used equally for ex-Mormons, liberal Mormons, conservative Mormons. So just because you doubled down as a Mormon in certain things and you had your pet project of marking up your scriptures like crazy and never missing a family home evening, that's all well and good, but there are a lot of Mormons who go through the key end-to-end experience that don't, you know, have a six color code system for the Book of Second Nephi or whatever. So, I wanted this to be kind of logistical things you do, important things that are part of the Mormon experience that aren't as much defined by how passionate you are toward those things.
Is it just me, or is anyone else imagining Bob with glasses on and a white lab coat as he's reading this? Absolutely brilliant. I love this.
So Bob, who keeps referring to the word or using the word pedantic in each of his emails, just spoke.
Right.
Thanks for that, Matt. Yeah. Bob the hypocrite. Bob is an emailer and is a guy on a podcaster, like two different Bobs. And I'll take that one. So the reason I was referring to the word pedantic so much is because I felt like everyone wanted to expand the scope, and most of the reactions were like, wait a second, I didn't score a perfect 100, and it's because in my unique case, I'm more Mormon in this way.
Who was like that?
All of you.
No
I was like that.
I'm sitting there defending the guy who converted people before his mission.
Right.
You're telling me that he doesn't get a bump from that? That's, I can't. Okay. We should go through the question.
We should go through the list. After Bob's diatribe there explaining his criterion and why he determined certain things matters and others don't, we should go through the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
What ranks or what is on the list of making giving somebody Mormon cred?
Yeah, so there are 18 questions. You want me to just read through them?
Yeah, don't give the points. Just read through them real quick.
Although, wait, before you do that, I do want to kind of comment on this whole Mormon credibility thing. Is there was a person I worked with who would basically say that I don't have any ability to criticize the church, or I can't criticize the church because I'm I'm basically a non-believer, and I explained to that person, but I'm more Mormon than you are. I've been on a mission. I've been through the temple. You know, I've raised kids in the church, whereas this person was single and had never done any of those things. And so my argument was, I am more Mormon than you are. So it kind of, this is kind of the backdrop for this idea is, even as a non-believer, don't I have more credibility than certain people who are in the church?
And I guess the way that we'd frame that, and tell me if I'm wrong, Bob, but it would be, that you have experienced more of the end-to-end Mormon experience than this guy has.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, and I'll read through these, and I'll still say the points really fast. They're in 5-point increments, and it helps add context, and it won't take more than 5 seconds more. So here they are. Do you come from a long line of Mormons? +5. Are you a convert? -15. Or did your parents convert with you and you can remember it? Then only -10.
That was such a confusing question to me.
When you
ask those like compound questions, that it just like complicated things. But anyway,
okay. And you were the one that tells Bob to just read through them.
Yeah.
Come on, Glenn. Yeah. Well, no, but no. Don't let's not read through them. Actually, so the problem with that section, is you have both you've given too much of a negative to people who have converted or their parents have. Converted. So what about my situation where my mother's family goes all the way back to Joseph Smith, but my dad was a convert at 18?
Yeah, you get a pass. It's fine.
2.5 points.
All right.
But aren't you really, Bob, just trying to emphasize how important it is to have you know your heritage and your genealogy rooted deeply within Mormonism?
Right. And if you have the reason in the question, if you read it carefully, it says parents. If you have at least one parent who isn't a convert, then you don't have to lose points. This is if like you are truly a convert and remember it, and your parents either weren't involved or that's like -15 points, because that means you converted when you were older, you didn't get their permission perhaps. But if your parents were involved and you remember it, at least one of them, both of them, then you don't lose as many points, but you still lose some points because you converted when you were like 6, 7, 8, 9, and so you missed out on the first part of growing up Mormon.
So you know how man will be punished for his own sins and not for Adam's transgression?
Yeah.
Where's the correlation between, you know, you will get credit for your own end-to-end Mormon experience and not for your parents or ancestors?
Hey, you've been around these circles long enough, Glenn. You've heard, well, my history goes back to Nauvoo or back to Palmyra.
Yeah.
That's a decent resume thing that Mormons use all the time.
Okay, so then the experience is that kind of bragging. Like, have you ever bragged about your ancestry? Not necessarily that you have them. Okay,
Have you ever referred to yourself as cattle? I'm from good stock.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, I'm good Mormon stock.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can take these a couple at a time and then comment. So the next is, did one or both of your parents convert, but before you were born, or were one or both born into the church? That's another compound sentence that you all hate, but it's just kind of the inverse. So it gives back, that's +5, gives back some points. Did you go through the temple? +10. Did you serve a mission? +10. These ones I'm assuming you guys are mostly okay with, that those are two big milestones that give you credibility.
Yep. Yeah, although I think the mission should be a little bit more.
Yeah.
Three years, bro.
Well, let's talk about universal applicability, though, because I don't think that really applies the same way to men and women because of the different pressures based on, you know, the different pressures of going on a mission if you're a man versus a woman.
Agreed.
Yeah, I almost think if you were really going to go for universality, you'd have to have a very carefully constructed set of questions for women and a carefully constructed like corresponding set of questions for men. But I don't think it can be the same question, or that the answers can all have the same weight. Just because of those very things. I mean, a woman who goes on a mission would probably get more points than a guy who goes on a mission. She would have more cred than a guy who did, because it's a more rare thing, right?
Maybe, but a quick fix to that.
But they don't serve as long, though, Glenn. They don't serve as long.
It doesn't matter. So maybe shave off a couple of points, but they would still have like 20 compared to 10 for other guys.
It's a wash. It's a wash. I'm with Bob. No one else is going to have
his mission,
back.
I'm saying it's like either you're pregnant or you're not. Either you went or you didn't.
Right. And I think the quick fix to that, as I'm thinking out loud, is, in my opinion, from talking to women about it, perhaps going through the temple, especially if you don't go on a mission, is a bigger deal because it has different implications and a lot of times it's associated with marriage and wearing weird underwear that isn't quite as weird for men because men have underwear that's similar in style in some way. So I've just had experience with women taking the temple milestone and having that be more of an experience than with men where it kind of goes hand in hand. So in some ways, a quick fix would be to say, did you go through the temple plus 15 for women? Did you serve a mission? For women, it's plus 5. So you just weight them slightly differently. But for men, it's plus 10, plus 10. But
yeah,
now
well,
we're
it's, yeah, but it's the being married in the temple is the woman's equivalent of going on a mission. So if you married in the temple before 21, that's like plus 10.
Yeah, see? Well, and we do have different
bought into that to those gender roles all the way. You go right from father's home to husband's home, bam, that's the Mormon experience. And so a woman who's gone to college and has experienced these things and has had other experiences outside of that loses Mormon credibility because they haven't participated fully in the Mormon experience as a woman.
Yeah, there's something to that.
I don't know that lose credibility, though. If they've still participated in those exercises that they need to get the points, I wouldn't knock them down because they're also getting an education.
But as long as that education wasn't BYU. So the more somebody extends beyond the bubble, the less Mormon credibility they have because arguably the easier it's going to be to break free.
Sure, and I think it's more that a woman who does, I like the way you phrased it, Matt. It's like goes from husband to, or goes from father to husband in like one move. there is something to be said about that being deservedly more credible in some ways for the woman Mormon experience. But again, keeping to the like 5-point minimum, I don't know that it's worth enough to parse it out. But let's go through some of these other ones. So this next one is complicated, but I like it. Have you only ever had sex after marriage or no sex with a partner? Or if you had sex before marriage, did you sincerely consider it the biggest mistake of your life at the time? Plus 5. And in parentheses, that's assuming you're not a murderer, in which case, minus 50. So a lot of compoundness in there, but I think we all get it. Having sex before marriage, that's a big deal. Did you get married in the temple? Plus 5. And then the next series of questions, I feel like I just want to point out, boost my credibility because I can't claim any points for any of these, but I recognize them as a gap in my Mormon experience that is important. So there's several questions about children. Have you had a child while in the church? Plus 5. Have you had multiple children while in the church? Plus 5. Were your children baptized while you were in the church? Plus 5. Did your children go through puberty while you were in the church? Plus 5. So that's 20 points for the full Mormon child-bearing experience that I don't have kids, so I can't claim. But I think that's a relevant, important part. And the older the kids get, the more of that full end-to-end Mormon experience you have that you don't have if you haven't gone all the way through that.
Yeah, I applaud you for that. Yeah,
I agree with those.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up.
What about if you get married? What if you meet your spouse on your mission?
No, that would favor me too much. Too much of an anomaly. Although
really?
not too much. Maybe it's just a minority, but not anyway. Did you go to a church-owned school? Plus 10 points. Did you graduate from a church-owned school? meaning you put in like, you know, 2 to 4 years plus 5 points. See,
can you really weight the Provo BYU experience the same as BYU Hawaii?
I think so. I've talked to people who've gone to BYU Hawaii. I mean, yes, there is a level of more hardcore Mormon experience, but not to the point where I'm going to parse it out and say it has to be BYU and Provo. Because BYU Idaho, I've heard, also is a slightly different experience, but still fairly Mormon-y.
All right.
But that also, I mean, it seems to violate one of your criteria that it's not really a balanced experience going across the globe, you know, that people, Mormons in other countries don't all have the same opportunity to go to a church-owned university that somebody...
Sure they do.
Really?
Sure they do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so at least in my mission...
All right.
No, I'm just
yes,
saying...
Yes, they do, Glenn.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Decreed. All right. Once again.
Minus 5 points for me.
Can I explain? You guys
so
are great. You're like,
so
oh.
Be said.
It has been said. No explanation needed, Bob. Move on.
Hey, Matt, you need to back up the graduating seminary. That's got to be on there.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, but it's Bob's scale, and he's been taking a lot of shit so far, so meh.
I have answers for all of these. Just let me respond. Here's the
all
thing.
Right, go ahead.
So the church-owned school one, the church, especially since Gordon B. Hinckley and you know, the more recent years, the last 15, 20 years, has a lot of programs and a lot of support and support groups to get people who are international to have that full end-to-end experience. It was encouraged, and you could tell who really was going all the way with you know, and this speaks to, like, the trajectory of a Mormon convert. They get converted, their kids are younger, their kids get older, and if they're really doing the full end-to-end thing, even if they don't live in the States, a lot of times a church-owned school is equally weighted and really strived for, and they're really supported to get their children over to the States for that experience. So it's not as easy as if you grew up in Utah, of course, but it's still possible, and it's still something that happens all the time.
And, well, and you're really and required... Aren't you also required to take religious courses while you attend?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and aren't you required to graduate seminary if you go to a BYU school?
I don't think you're required to graduate. I think you're just required to attend religious courses. Is that right, Glenn?
Yeah, you have to have a certain number of credits. If I remember when I was going.
I think you have to graduate seminary to be eligible to go to a church-owned school.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
No, not if you're well,
yeah,
no,
I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong with that.
If you're American, I think that's the all right. Whatever.
So, just case in point, my wife never went to seminary, and she graduated from BYU with all of the right religious credits.
Oh, there's another Uchtdorf anomaly. I kid.
No, I do think there are different standards for American Mormons and foreign-born Mormons.
Yeah, they could very well could be. Sometimes that happens.
There must be. I mean, there would have to be.
I thought you were going to say different standard for wives of Bob.
Oh, maybe. So next one where I get to claim Matt's a hypocrite. Did you grow up in Utah, or because Matt wanted it, a Mormon heavy area? Sorry, Glenn, for the word heavy. Stop panting. A Mormon heavy area like parts of Arizona or Idaho. Or have you lived in Utah or a Mormon-heavy area like parts of Arizona or Idaho longer than a year for reasons other than going to school?
Which is bullshit. I throw the flag out on Arizona being part of this thing.
Hey.
Arizona is a Utah wannabe South. That's all Arizona
okay,
is.
Okay, first of
true.
All.
That's true.
The fact... That's why it counts. Wannabe proves the point.
That's why it counts.
Wannabe doesn't count as if you were part of it, though. That's what I don't
time for seminary, man.
It is we get release hour for seminary. It is governmentally, just culturally, it is very uniquely Mormon. I mean, you can't get away from it.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite experiences when I was in high school and I was driving around in Mesa and I pulled up behind this Suburban that had a bumper sticker on the back of it that said, "No, we're not."
That's good.
That's a pretty heavily Mormon area. Something like that can fly. It was good.
Now, granted, the actual population of Mesa is only right around 10%, which seems wow, that's nothing. But influence-wise, it's, you know, when you talk about activity in school, influence in government, it's going to be closer to anywhere between 20% and 50%.
Whatever. Come back to me when you guys have 80%, like where I'm at. So, no, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing. Here's the other point, though, there, is because you have so many, Jack Mormons and apathetic Mormons, which makes it easier to be that in Utah. Yeah. Here, it's a bigger deal.
I don't know. You're reaching. I don't know. There's more believers than there are Jack Mormons and apathetic. Yeah, come on.
I didn't say there are more. I said you have a large percentage of apathetic and Jack Mormons.
Okay, well, but you are like, when you look at Arizona as just the Phoenix area, which arguably you probably should, but, like, I grew up in a town that was founded by Mormon settlers, right? I grew up in Snowflake. Well, I grew up in Sholo, Arizona, but, like, Snowflake, Arizona, all those places were founded by people that Brigham Young sent out. So,
right. My family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. But there were Mormons that settled lots of areas, like even in Mexico. So go on. Where's the point there?
So my point is that it's legit. It counts as the Morador. It counts as the Morador.
So I got to ask, no. Bob, going back to your fairness criteria, how does this – I mean, you've got Tom here saying that you should exclude anybody outside of Utah, but you don't want to have exclusive criteria in your questions. You want it to be globally applicable. So how is this one globally applicable?
Yeah, good question.
All right, I'm taking it out. It doesn't count. No, across the board.
Matt, stop it. Stop it. So here's the deal. This one, when originally written, was not globally applicable enough. And it is a harder one for global Mormons. I grant you that. But it's, again, it has wiggle room and it's not impossible. So it's combining two things. It's not just if you grew up in Utah, but notice how all you have to do is live in Utah or one of these heavily populated, we're using Arizona and Idaho as a proxy, but you can count it if you feel like you have another example. All you have to do is live in a heavily populated Mormon area, predominantly Mormon, for a year or more outside of going somewhere for school, and this counts. So again, I know many converts and people from other countries who end up for lots of different reasons, job related, sometimes their connections are church related, and then they get a job and they move to Utah after having gone to school in Utah. It's not that improbable. It happens all the time that even international Mormons get their 1 year or more of living in a predominantly Mormon area. It's harder for them, but then again, I think it's fine to argue that overall it's harder for an international Mormon to have the full Mormon experience, but it's not impossible.
Why are you excluding school as a legitimate reason to be living in a predominantly Mormon area?
Because BYU wards are not the same as
exactly. Family. Yeah, there's a different experience that comes with living and going through the church school structure than living in a predominantly Mormon, I grew up or lived there type of environment independent of school, because it means you're either growing up in it or you're an adult in it, which is a different measure of extra credibility beyond the school experience.
Okay.
Yep. Write that down, Jake. That's decreed once again.
Decreed, yes. Bob, yes. Let it be written. Yeah.
Okay. Next one for everyone to shit on. Okay. did you?
You know, you could just use a few qualifiers. I really feel perhaps. Some might argue, or but there's none of that.
I put an asterisk under right. each of these questions.
That's why if I just change the fucking title to Bob's Mormon Cred Scale, I don't have to do the, like, subtle give everyone a chance thing where it's not – but it's the Mormon Cred Scale. So
I'll just find somebody else named Bob who agrees with me.
Right. There you go. Did you receive your patriarchal blessing? Plus +5.
Yeah, bullshit on this one.
What? Why?
Well, because it's a relatively innocuous and just a small experience, and it's one that everybody's going to go through, at least in the States, if they're anywhere near a stake.
You still got to go through the interview process. You got to be a certain age, and most believing Mormons, when they get it, it's their personal scriptures.
Personal set of scriptures.
Why not? I'm going through the as a kid for baptisms for the dead. That's just as significant or just
No. Baptism for the dead is not relevant to you personally. It's not something you tuck in the back of your scriptures and read to yourself when you fall asleep.
Nope. Oh, you know. But I disagree there. Like if you've done any kind of proxy work for any of your ancestors, you've got Mormon cred in my book.
That's covered in the did you grow up. Yeah,
it's covered where?
You going through a 5-minute blessing gets the same amount of points as going on a 2-year mission.
Right.
Listen.
That's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
All right, Matt's totally jaded because everyone knows good blessings are longer than 5 minutes. That's the first problem. And the second problem is, what's your personal credibility on this, Matt? Did you get yours?
Of course I got one. I went on a mission.
Yeah, did it suck balls, or did it tell you stuff about the future state of your life and the calling of the first resurrection and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I got all Mormon cred when it comes to patriarchal blessing. I'm a leader. I'm doing all these things, but I'll go even one up. If you put my wife's patriarchal blessing and mine next to each other, it is completely different until the point that you get married, and then it almost mirrors one another.
Ooh. See, that's you're proving why it's relevant. You know that, and it mattered to you at one point.
We both have the same patriarch.
But he didn't know you guys were going to get married.
But here's the thing.
No, he only has like 2 scripts.
Jake,
he goes
help
by.
Me out. Jake.
Okay. No.
It's true.
So if this is about the end Mormon experience, like a piece of that has to be about like the feeling that you have this Mormon destiny,
right,
and a personalized blessing that's given to you that gives you your lineage and the future and like all this stuff. I mean, that seems like it should be part of the cred.
Here.
I don't know if it should be the same as the mission though.
I'm admittedly projecting here because my patriarchal blessing, although fine, really didn't have that much impact on me. I read it, I carried around in my scriptures and all that, but it just didn't have anywhere near the impact on me as did my priesthood line of authority. That had even more of an impact on me, I'd say, and that's the one I really pointed to more than my patriarchal blessing. So,
how do you pronounce that, Matt?
Patriarchal?
Okay.
Yeah, you said article.
Yeah, patriarchal. I think you get Mormon cred for saying patriarchal.
You get more cred for saying it wrong.
Yeah, right.
You can't let that get Michael in.
Patriarchal.
The patriarchals of faith.
Yeah.
Back to the blessing, though. I mean, this is anecdotal. Yeah, that's it.
Right, there
now I'm really way up.
Anecdotal?
But my blessing was way more important because mine said that I was specific by saying that I would serve a foreign mission, and I did.
Yeah, well, Illinois.
Anything
outside of Utah to you is foreign. It sounds like
okay.
That's harsh, Tom. Man, we could do a whole episode on that. That's like you probably had.
We did once. It never aired.
And then I even went to my mission present because it says that I'd serve a foreign mission and that I'd receive the gift of tongues for a foreign language. And hillbilly wasn't gift to tongue, whatever.
But it was contingent upon your righteousness, right? And so you must have done something wrong.
That's not what it said. Well, that's not what it said.
It always is. It always is.
It may not have said that, but everybody knows.
No, my mission president said maybe what they're referencing is the mission that you haven't served yet.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Yeah. I like it.
That's...
Well, that's always the answer.
Right, as a couple missionary, when you and Christina go out.
Loophole.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. So three more to go, and I feel like each of these is going to deserve a little banter. So the first one is, have you served in a calling capacity that is more than a counselor or teacher, +5? So the point of this one is that everybody who's active will get a bullshit pass out hymn books calling by default. Everyone gets to experience that, but to have the full experience, you have to feel superiority, either as Relief Society president, Elders Quorum president, something that's more than just, everybody gets this. And if you haven't experienced being in that leadership role and the exhilaration that it comes with, then you know, you miss out on these 5 points.
Well, and this is where I take exception, because this is where the Tom Phillips thing comes in. The reason why he has so much credibility is because of his leadership roles, and because his leadership roles allowed him to get the second anointing. So that's why I think if you've served in like bishopric or higher, you should get another 5 or 10 points.
Oh, absolutely.
So you just want it to be more. Okay.
Kind of the way that you did it with the children experience, like that category was like 20 points, and then you had, you know, like each one worth 5. So this would be like a scaled thing that to get that full experience would be worth a total more, but you'd have to break it down a little bit. Is that kind of what you're saying, Tom?
Yeah, but also I'm trying to think how I would do this.
Yeah, but you also equated counselors and teachers. So if you're in a presidency, though, that should give you some points more than just a nursery teacher, a primary teacher.
Well, I'll grant you that my wording choice is not ideal. I'm just saying, like, second counselor, and there's like a hierarchy of, and we all know what it is, but we can't, like, completely define it. It's just
because you can't count Sunday school president.
It's just another way of saying, did you only have bullshit callings, or did you have authority over other people significantly callings? And then everybody can define that slightly differently for themselves. So I might not have put the parameters just right around it, but that's the vibe that I'm trying to give off.
All right.
Well, like executive secretary and bishop, I mean, that's they essentially have a part-time job in their ward.
Yeah, executive secretary is a huge deal. I personally think that that's considerable and counts. You get the 5 points for that because you get to see the inner workings of how stuff happens. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I'm gonna say gospel doctrine teacher. You should get something.
Bullshit. No way.
Yeah, no. But I agree with that. That's a pretty prominent role in the ward.
No, we've all done it.
Well, we've all done it. But I mean, you get some cred for having experienced it.
You don't get authority, though. You don't get any authority. It's like you're just yapping away at the front of the room because everybody gets a chance at the mic.
But you have influence. You may not have authority, but you have influence.
Oh, influence. They put nut jobs up there. I don't know.
Exactly.
They yank you when you start going off script.
Not if they don't have a sub in or somebody else they can call in.
Not if you have credibility, man. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, right.
I proved that.
Next
4 years,
one.
Bro.
Have you had delusions of authority, grandeur, and assumed you'd eventually be bishop, stake president, or at least mission president someday? Or
the
wife?
The problem with this is that's every Mormon. Every Mormon, or certainly every missionary.
Well, give yourself 5 points. There are some Mormons. You don't know those Mormons that sort of like, this speaks to like Glenn's brother. I'm pretty sure it never would get 5 points for this.
Yeah, sorry, but he close to home? He like left the church when he was 15.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But even when I was 15, I was still having these feelings pretty early on. But it was clear, you know, his trajectory was never going to allow for this.
Well,
maybe.
The reason I didn't like this question because I felt like it was calling out the narcissist. Like, where are you at? Where are you at? Because you have delusions of grandeur, don't you?
Mormonism, though.
Yeah,
there's no way to escape narcissism.
No, part of Mormonism is you're supposed to be humble and charitable, dude. Yeah,
no,
right. No. It's
keeping your eyes set on.
Yeah, no, it's the false humility. You got to have this. Yeah, and a great example of it.
It doesn't feel false, though, Matt. It feels genuine.
Yeah, my favorite talks. Yeah,
that's the delusion part of it, Tom.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the delusionally humble. But I love in general conference when an apostle will get up and talk about the men, the other apostles, and how great they are, and how wonderful they have to be because they're an apostle. And it's like this kind of, I'm so humbled that I associate with these men on a daily basis. Dude, you just are basically calling yourself great.
Well,
that's what you're saying. By elevating everybody else in that position, Mormons all do the same thing.
I'm sure I've used this example before, but there was a guy who got up and gave a prayer in sacrament meeting and said, we are so humbled to be the most chosen of thy people.
Right.
And like, I just like fell off the bench. Like, everybody around, I like looked, opened my eyes, looking around. Anybody else hearing this? Did you guys catch this? We're most humbled to be the most chosen of all thy people. Like, how do those two ideas coexist next to each other without anybody batting an eye? And that's that false sense of humility. Oh, we said we're humble, so I guess we are in our arrogance. In our elitism, we are the most humble of all the elite.
Well, it wasn't until, Bob, when we were talking to Ben fellows from the Lacuna Brotherhood, when he was, when he'd said, you know, in my most modest moments, I would never have admitted that I, you know, foresaw myself becoming bishop one day. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I've never wanted to admit that, but yeah, all right, fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And good. Like when you became what Tom, high counselor?
Yeah. Why did you forget that?
You loved lording that over everybody.
Well, that gives me Mormon credibility,
that's
not on Bob's scale.
That's what I'm saying.
But,
you know, and actually that might be a better one, is that are you a high priest as a guy?
Yeah,
hey,
right.
You get, you, for sure, sub that in for the calling capacity one, you know, more than a counselor, teacher, high priest, that
all
kind
right.
of stuff.
I accept that.
You get 5 points. Cool.
I accept your amendment, Bob.
See, I listen to the people sometimes when they come before me and kneel properly. Yeah. So, last question. Do you or your immediate family have a personal story involving a general authority? +5.
I think that pretty much covers everybody, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, that's...
Gotta kill this one.
No, why?
Because everybody's got at least, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. They're gonna...
This is the one that's the most fun, because everybody is gonna have... a shitty story that's not a real story, but they're going to want to count the points, and that's the whole point of the question.
Hey, but it's not a shitty story to us, Bob. Come on, man.
See? Yep. Like, I shook hands with him. Like, you want to count that as your story? Okay, cool.
He came to state conference, and I stood in line with all the other 500 people and shook his hand. It was amazing.
But the fact that you remembered it and it matters to you still to this day gives you the 5 points. If somebody with a blank stare, back to... Glenn's brother, as an example, edit this out, Glenn, if this is too much focus on your brother or whatever. I'm pretty sure if you were to spot check with him and be like, hey, do you have any memory of a meeting a general authority and what did that mean to you? He'd be like, what? No, what? Who again? I'm sure I might have. I don't remember. But anyone who deserves these points would be like, absolutely, I remember. It felt so great. It was at this event or that event at this time of year. Like, you know all these weird surrounding variables. That's why you get the points, is because it matters.
Well, because my dad had the story of shaking hands with Spencer Kimball at one point, and he said that they locked eyes. And I mean, yeah. it didn't get intimate or anything weird.
I shook Spencer W. Kimball's hand.
We'll see.
See?
5 points for Glenn.
Yeah.
My family's from, or my grandparents are from Safford, Arizona, and so Spencer W. Kimball was their state president, and they were around that same era, and they went square dancing with them and all this other crap, so they were like best friends with Spencer W. Kimball in my family narrative, and so...
I've got family from Safford too, Matt. Yay!
Well, there we go.
Yay. So all that adds up to 100 points, and we all scored... 70 or higher. Glenn is the reigning champion of the infants at 85.
Arguably.
I feel like I need to jump in with a quick update. We now have Randy's score, and it's a funny thing. It turns out he's actually the most Mormon of all the infant panelists, even more than Glenn. Randy scored a whopping 95 out of 100. Because it matters so much. As I keep saying, it doesn't matter. It's all about the three big buckets. I think I'd really like to put, especially people I don't know that well, I'd really like to only know them in this way. So that's why I really want everyone in the world to fill this out.
So my turn. My turn.
Okay, go, Glenn.
So,
go.
Wait a minute. So if you, before you get there, so is there a, so do you, have you ranked this though? If you're under a certain points, then you don't get to complain when you leave. You just have to leave quietly, and you really can't. You have to leave it and leave it alone. Is that
Sort of. I mean, if you complain, you have to, you know, put all the cards on the table that you only get partial credit for complaining or something. I don't want to completely take it away from you because you do have some points, but the three buckets were, now that you've heard how all these points add together, 70 or higher. And you're in the free pass zone, like active Mormon, liberal Mormon, conservative, ex-Mormon. You all have the same amount of credibility. 50 to 70, you're in the caveat zone of you need to disclose, but it's usually just, oh, I'm a convert, or but I still went through most everything. But even converts can be in the top category. And then 50 points, under 50 points is where you really have to be like, I only partially made it through the whole system. So when I complain, it's not as valid, and you just have to admit it to yourself.
Well, see, I used to be really active in these kind of former Mormon groups here in real life, locally here in Arizona. We'd have book clubs, and we have these discussions and real
Ouija board sessions.
Yeah, they were just really just painfully obnoxious retelling of the same story, and just right, kind of. Yeah. We told ourselves it was cathartic and it, whatever. But there was a couple
wow.
people. I'm a former Mormon now, it feels like. But there was always a couple people who would want to pipe up.
You're so cool, man.
Bag on the church. I'm so beyond this.
You're
yeah,
so cool.
It's very hipstery of me.
You're very cool.
self-aware, yeah.
Yes, I'm sitting here with my microbrew and my beard as I speak. so, but there would be a couple people that would bag on the church, and we would be very judgy towards them of, you know, saying you don't get to complain. You don't get to have these same. We're not going to validate your feelings because you didn't sacrifice your experience
right.
what we did.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was kind of what I thought about, and Bob's used my brother as an example, you know, that I thought of an experience that I had with my brother, and I was with Randy at the time, and we were all in Kansas City visiting my sister, and we started talking about the temple, as Randy does. I still don't approve of it. And, you know, talking about the handshakes and the names and stuff. My brother never went through any of that, and so he jumped in, he started bagging along with it, and it really annoyed me. And there might be some like sibling rivalry over where I'm like, my little brother's got to stay in his place. Maybe there was some of that. But it was kind of like, you didn't go on a mission for 2 years. That's out of bounds for you. You can't make fun of that. You didn't go through the temple. You didn't go through all that stuff. You never believed it. You never cared about it. So there was something that was very distasteful to me about him complaining about that. So, you know, when I'm thinking about Bob's Mormon cred scale, it felt like there were some things that were missing to me there that are like the inner gooey center of the Mormon experience that like mm-hmm. it seems like there's like this nice hard candy shell around it, but where's that nice gooey center of the Mormon experience? So that's why I went through and tried to at a very high level say, what are the categories of the Mormon experience? And I came up with five that I think.
That was very Dan Witherspoon of you. I'm going to do this at a higher level. This is a higher level than what
yeah.
Bob did.
Yeah.
You've got this
right.
You've got this thin
yeah.
form of
right.
Mormon cred. I'm going to do the fat
right.
version.
Yeah. I'm going to do the inner.
Right. Yeah, can I use the word pedantic again?
You can.
So pedantic.
You can. And I'm going to say whatnot now, like seven times in a row, and then you can really get Witherspoon on me and whatnot. So, okay, but I see that heritage is a really important category. Cultural immersion, how much you actually participated in the culture that is Mormonism, which is separate from the beliefs and everything. And then you've got like a belief and worldview, how much you really even bought into any of this stuff. You weren't just going through the motions. Then there's things that you just do because you're supposed to do them, like the obedience factor, and you're just following without thinking about it. And then there's that personal identity thing that Jake brought up earlier. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to go into the details of all those, but when I took those five and superimposed them over Bob's questions, like I saw that Bob was very heavy into the heritage and the obedience and behavior, but very light on the cultural parts of Mormonism, the belief and worldview parts of Mormonism, and that personal identity parts of Mormonism. I think the GA story, like, do you have a GA story that goes into that personal identity thing? But the other areas I felt were lacking.
I'm not asking questions about did you do scripture mastery, because it's kind of assumed that you know what scripture mastery is if you tick off several of these other boxes, which are much larger key milestones that aren't as pedantic in terms of the point values that they would deserve. Because stuff like, you know, did you have a picture of Jesus hanging in your home? Sure, yeah, that's really Mormon, but that doesn't deserve 5 points, or doesn't feel like it feels like it's just getting into the weeds too much.
Yeah, I wanted a little more weeds because I like to have those kinds of questions that would start to differentiate people from each other? And I know you wanted to stick with maybe like no more than 20 questions, but I would be okay with 50. You know,
but then it would differentiate people on that. Back to Jake's, the way you articulated it, Jake, at the beginning was really great, and I'm trying to rehash it. But this is less about measuring passion and degree of commitment as it is the universal baseline commitment, independent of how passionate you go in each of the verticals of those key milestone commitments. And so it seems like a lot of what you wanted to do, Glenn, was to play around with the passion level. But then that all of a sudden makes it less relevant for, you know, conservative Mormons versus liberal Mormons, because the liberal Mormons wouldn't get points for, you know, they don't have family portraits with everybody holding their scriptures hanging above the fireplace mantle like a hardcore conservative Mormon would have. Because I did have friends like that, by the way. That's like their family portrait. Everybody has scriptures in their hand, and it's just like so over the top. And in one sphere of measurement, and that could increase your points, but it's in another sphere, it's irrelevant.
Well, that is a very weed level detail that if we identify that as the type of question that we would want to ask, then I would say, let's scale back and go, what type of a question is this? Okay, that's like a personal identity thing that has to do with your family, you know, like the family picture. So we would raise that up a level and make it more general and inclusive so that it fits your three criteria that you wanted to do. And so it's this exercise of trying to parse out the questions, get them at the right level, you know. So what I was proposing that we do is go through that exercise, not here's the question, CTR ring, put it in there. A question like a CTR ring. And like if you put in a CTR ring question compared to a did you go on a mission question, you're not going to weight those two the same, you know, for reasons that you've already explained.
Right.
But I do think, you know, there are people that have, like the Mormon experience is so complicated and so complex to try and really capture it in 20 questions or less, you're not going to get it. And like it's a fun exercise. But is there more that you can capture with that? Because I liked the direction that you were going with it. I just wanted to go, yeah, let's do this.
And me playing my God role, part of me is like, nah, it's 80% good enough. Quit cherry picking the parts of the Old Testament that you don't like. Come on, it's still in the Bible. Leave it alone. It's close enough. If you're going to believe, you know, all this stuff collectively, you know, just gloss over those parts that you're not as comfortable with. And because if you, and I think, I mean, the analogy falls apart, of course, clearly in several ways. But if you look at this fun little exercise, you know, going through it at a higher level or taking it to the next level is like, in my opinion, just making it incrementally slightly better, but it's 80% there and I think it's fun and good enough. And that's kind of the attitude I was running with
Well, I think we've also got a very small sample size to compare, you know, where the scores are, because I should have done this with my wife, what score she would get on this, but she would probably get pretty close to mine, maybe like around 60 points or something. But like my wife didn't know who the Jaredites were, so I was talking with her. I'm like, who are the Jaredites? And she started laughing. She goes, the more I probed on that, she like eventually she goes, okay, they were the ones that came across on the submarines, and she started getting it. But
tied,
you know, like,
onto a dish,
tied into a dish, and then like with the stones and all that thing, and she gradually started remembering it.
Yeah.
But
by the way, what the hell? The submarines? That's a crazy story.
Right.
No,
right.
That's
right. But like, so if you're scoring similar points, but there's something so fundamentally missing in what the experience is. I mean, I don't know. I think you need to capture that somehow, and that's why there was like the belief in the worldview that you bought into, how important it was to you, that I didn't quite get. Anyway, I'll stop talking.
Sure.
About it,
but.
What about a slightly different direction? I don't know if you guys have ever heard this. Have you guys ever heard, as ex-Mormons in some of the groups that I kind of run in now, have you ever heard that if someone resigns from the church that they lose quite a bit of Mormon credibility?
Yeah,
so
that's
sure. as a Mormon critic, they're like, well, you resigned from the church, so I'm not going to listen to what you have to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So I do want to talk about that. Is there like what's the decay rate on your credibility? Like as you go out of the church, how does that credibility decay? Because yeah, I think there is some sort of decay, but we're acting like it's static over time, right? You achieve these milestones and then it's in the bank forever, but that's not the case.
No, right. It is. It's because once you've experienced it, once you've been there, you can still tap into it. So I still have a guy that I talk to on a regular basis who's in the High Council who comes to me and asks me questions about theology, about Mormon culture, about practices, when issues come up in High Council. So, you know, this is going on, and I wanted to get your advice. I don't know why I'm coming to you because I know you don't believe anymore, but you know a lot more about this than I do. And so he's earnestly trying to get my advice on things that they're dealing with on the High Council. So I'm going to say you always get – once you attain that credibility, you never lose it.
I'm going to go a slightly different
route. I'm going to push against that. Yeah. Go ahead, Bob.
In the 30 seconds since Jake brought it up, I've given it a lot of thought. And I think, because I like to quantify things arbitrarily, I think it's something like, using my own scale, you lose 1 point – for every year out of the church. So if you live till you're...
What?
No, hear me out. If you live until you're like 80 and you left the church when you were 30, then you're losing 50 points. But if you were Mormon, then by the time you're 80, two-thirds of your life, you know, is no longer Mormon. But you still get to claim, with a pretty big caveat, you still get to claim that you were Mormon, but... I don't know. Maybe that's too rapid of, you know, I'm sort of thinking out loud.
No,
maybe
it's half I think,
year or I don't know what it is, but it's something around that those lines.
Well, the thing is, like, if being Mormon or experiencing Mormonism is something where, I mean, if we're quantifying it to the point where we're measuring how much you bought into it, the longer that you stay away from the mentality, the more foreign it becomes. And I'm realizing right. that, like, over time, you know, like some people in my family, like the experience that Glenn talked about, where it's like, we're so humbled to be your most choice people. Like, that's not even on the radar for most Mormons. But the fact that he's been out for a certain amount of time means that he was able to recognize that as something being crazy.
Well, I was still in when that happened, but anyway.
But the point is, like, the farther away you are from Mormonism, the less you can really tap into that mentality. And I feel like, to a certain extent, I think there is a decay rate.
As the ex-Mormon cred increases.
If it is cred, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, what's ex-Mormon cred?
I don't know. what would you do
That's
if
like
someone...
if you drink, if you...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If you have a coffee maker, right?
Coffee.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You do a podcast.
Yeah. Do a podcast. Right.
Have you been on a Mormon podcast? What would you do with someone like Jan Shipps? Is that a Uchtdorf anomaly?
Yeah, kind of, because she's never – she's like a scholar but never actually converted, right? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. No, I mean never even close to converted. She doesn't believe any of it, but she is very respectful of it. I mean she's a – I think – what's she's a Methodist, Jake? Is that what she
is? Yeah, she's a Methodist.
But like as far as knowledge base – she knows Mormon history really well. I mean, so there's things about the church. So, like, how would she get some kind of Mormon cred? Or
she would, but it this scale is just totally falls apart for her because
no, if you haven't been baptized, you can't earn points.
Yeah, well, and it's a different. It's a,
what
it's
if like you were baptized, but part of your clothes floated up?
This is Mormon, you know, this is the end-to-end experience cred. Her cred is like real cred, so like it's the same word. We use cred in both scenarios, but it's actually two different versions of cred. Because right. She's actually like educated, not just someone who went through the experience. So I think it's just apples and oranges. She just doesn't, she wouldn't fill out the scale because it wouldn't, she would get close to zero. And that's not the same credibility as the credibility she really does have.
You know, this discussion just reminds me of a blog I read about from a bartender who's talking about what each drink that you order means. And each one has just had this real negative connotation. He basically is judging people for every drink. And then at the end he says, basically, if you order anything, you're an asshole. And that's kind of – it's just about – at the end of the day, it's just about judging other people and saying, here's – you know, you're not – you – for some reason you don't have the same ability to speak on something or at least on Mormonism than I do. That's really what it's about. And I support that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's like one of those things in life where the more self-aware you are, the less bad you get, you know, you have to feel about something that you know is kind of a dick thing to think, or I don't know what the inverse relationship is there, because it doesn't quite pan out that easily, but that's how we want it to be. Anyway.
Isn't that when someone can say, the reason why I can speak about Prop 8 or gay subjects is because I have gay friends?
Yeah, yeah. See, that's right. A classic example. Right. That's perfect. Yeah.
It's that, like, is good.
Really? Because you have gay friends? You want to look in the mirror and say that one more time and just see how you feel about it, looking at yourself when you say it?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. So some of you took issue with this example when you were interviewing Matthew on that previous episode.
Uh-huh. I was in the church about a year, and I had just baptized my third convert. I decided, you know what? I want my kids to go on missions. I want my grandkids to go on missions, so I need to set the example. I can't be a hypocrite. And so I filled out the papers, and I was a member about a year and a half when I left for the Philippines.
And you had baptized three of your friends? Is that... Before
Correct.
You went, okay. So you were gung ho.
You thought that he should get a lot of bonus credibility for having converted friends in high school, before his mission, and that somehow was like super super Mormon sauce for the credibility scale. And I think that's total bullshit because it has nothing to do with the true Mormon end-to-end experience.
Whoa, really?
You think that's bullshit? Of course it does. Yeah.
No, not in the way that you guys want to quantify it.
Wait.
See, this is where you lose credibility.
It's your fucking scale. The way that we want to quantify it?
Well, okay. How do you not want to quantify it? Do you want it to have points or not?
Yeah, it of course should have points. This is where you lose credibility.
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Because it demonstrates two things. One, the whole the cultural experience that you bought into it, and then Glenn's how much you've bought into it, I guess, is that you've if you've converted, you're all the way in to the point that you start actually helping to convert other people, and that you're successful in doing that means you're pretty persuasive. I think you are, and then you that gives you credibility, but then you also have those people's souls or that on your kind of on your head as well. So I don't know. I think it definitely adds.
I think again, it goes, you know, to my conversation or my experience with my brother where it, you know, and I said this in the email, I didn't say this when we were talking about it, but if he would have been bagging on scouts or Deacon's Quorum, passing the sacrament, things like that, that he actually participated in, then yes, of course he's got credibility there. I don't have the problem. It's when he's going outside of his experience and especially that it's being critical and it's bagging on. It just feels like you're being disingenuous. It feels like you're being a poser, like you just want to fit in with the cool guys, and the cool guys bag on stuff, and so we're going to bag on stuff too, and I'm cool too, huh? It's that kind of thing that I'm responding against. And if you've got if you have the experience to back up your criticism, then I'm less critical of your criticism. And so in Matthew's case, where he was only Mormon for 6 years, for me, it helps to see how much of an impact that 6 years had on his life and on his belief system, and that, you know, how much he bought into or whatever, that he was passing that on and sharing that to other people. Now when he's out of it and he's being critical about how much he believed and how much he bought in it and what an impact it had on his life, there's more credibility there because he really was pushing it, you know? So to me, that's why I think there's credibility. I think there should be points, but mm-hmm. but also to me, what I'm describing is problematic because the credibility is there's like a correlation between the experience and the criticism that you don't have any way of measuring in a BuzzFeed type scale. You know, right. It's just more of like a real life cred kind of situation.
Well, these questions should ultimately account for how much it impacted your life or how much you sacrificed for the religion. And that's really what it comes down to me, is in each of these questions should account for that. And the more it impacted or influenced you, and the way the way it impacted behavior, rather than just I go to church because my family goes to church, but it actually impacted behavior at school and other places, that starts getting to credibility to me.
But okay, so we're talking about two different things, because I'm going to sort of play the anomaly card slightly here, because I'm talking about the end-to-end Mormon experience, and
there is no single end-to-end Mormon experience, Bob.
And that's why nobody gets 100 points.
Yeah, but go ahead.
So what I'm trying to say is that the formula is slightly different for a convert, and it's very. It's very skewed in this weird way that has little to do with the end-to-end Mormon experience. That first year after you're converted, I remember my wife is a convert, and her first year, I remember she at one point had three callings simultaneously in a small branch and was really disproportionately spending a lot more time with the church because it was fresh in her mind. It was a huge commitment. So yes, there's like this special anomaly for the post conversion first year factor. But it's hard to give credit for that, because it's so indicative of that unique that particular conversion path that isn't really, it's a minority compared to what I'm trying to measure in terms of the overall Mormon experience. It's a very unique, concentrated experience for converts that isn't really that much about the real, in this case with Matthew, the real Mormon experience is the mission. If you actually were successful in converting three of your friends, the only way you are that way is because you're doing something that no person in the standard end-to-end Mormon experience would do, and that is successfully convert your friends in high school. That never happens. That is like, you don't get points for that because it's not something that's part of the standard experience.
See, but I think, with him, because he was only a member for 6 years, you've got to look at the possible end-to-end Mormon experience that was available to him during that time and how much he engaged in that. And to me, that's the measure of his credibility. I mean, again, taking him as like this one isolated person, but I think you could take that same approach with anybody.
Right. But then what that ends up doing is it ends up favoring converts in a way that allows them to quickly make up for lost time, and
it should because somebody who is a convert to the church, they're making the choice to engage in the church. It's not just something that they're born into and that they for years.
But when they go to a party and they meet another Mormon and their experiences are going past each other because there's only 20% overlap because the dude was only a Mormon, no matter how hardcore of a missionary he was and successful he was, sure, in one aspect of credibility, there's deeper cred in terms of his salesmanship, but it doesn't speak to his ability to speak about Mormonism as a whole. It doesn't really give him much more than the standard stuff you get from your mission. So from that perspective, he has very little extra credibility from doing bonus missionary work before his mission, because he already gets that credibility from the mission.
Well, no, but it's not just a convert. A member should get some credit too if they were to convert people on their or prior to their mission on their friends.
But that's like a success metric. It's not an experience metric.
Sorry. I was just going to expand on Matt's point, because when I was a home teacher, I was able to convert an inactive family and baptize their youngest daughter. So does that give me any points?
No. Good
yes.
for you, but
yes,
sorry,
it does,
man.
Yes, Tom.
No.
Yes. Being a home teacher by itself gives you cred that you were an active home teacher. You actually did that for me on this behavioral engagement scale. Yeah.
But for me, it implicitly gives you cred by having grown up in the church, by having lived in Utah. There's like so many questions where
follow
it's implied
me,
that you're a home
Tom.
Teacher.
Follow me.
Follow me.
Follow
Tom.
Me.
Follow me.
Follow me.
I'm going to go with Matt.
So are you gonna create that BuzzFeed thing then, Bob, and put it up on our site and let people?
If I can figure out the right vehicle to do it, I would love to like have this be like an interactive episode or something where
That'd be fun.
And then have a little box at the bottom like so people can chime in and add their support and or criticism.
Right. But are we going to put a stop to it if people start calling Bob bad names and shit?
No, because we don't censor.
Oh, okay. We're going to ask you for that. If you like to call Bob bad names.
Yeah. 5 points.
Yeah. Right. Minus 50.
Minus 50. Yeah, no, I'm cool with it.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
We are building a religion.
You've been listening to If and Stand Through. If and Stand Through. If and Stand
Through. Say, please subscribe to us.
Please subscribe to us.
On iTunes.
And iTunes.
Give us feedback.
And give us feedback.
We like 5 stars.
We like 5 stars.
Go to Infants on Thrones.
And go to Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Yes!
.com.
.com.
That's our website.
Please invite us, because this is me and Daddy speaking. Please listen to us. Goodbye.